Good morning. Today is Thursday, the 9th of November. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County District Attorney Stacy Eads.
Good morning.
Morning. You put the good in front of it. Let's find out, huh? You ready for the question?
You bet.
Really?
You know, I've been looking forward to this for weeks.
You can't filibuster for a whole segment, though.
Let's see.
Yeah. What else can we say? All right. Why do we call a bad actor a ham and a silly comedy slapstick?
Oh.
I have no clue either.
I don't know. I started thinking Hamlet, but it's like, and then I stopped there. So.
In the 19th century, second-rate actors couldn't afford cold cream to remove their stage makeup. So they used... Oh, gross. So they used ham
fat. Oh, that is gross.
And they were called ham fatters until early in the 20th century, when these bad actors were simply called hams.
This is not a good start.
No. There's part two here. Physical comedy became known as slapstick because of its regular use of crude and sound effects. Two sticks were slapped together off stage to accentuate a comic's onstage pratfall. Prat meaning an old English term. Never mind. Anyway, I think we peaked at ham. That's gross. Maybe it's worth pre-reading these things. I don't know. Yuck.
And I wonder if it was like, I don't know.
I know. This could many ways it could go, and none of them are real positive at this point.
We'll just let that one go.
Oh, gee. With the stuff that's going on in New York State, in New York City right now, is that exceptional to have a high profile like that? I can't recall any situations in the state of California that had that degree of exposure and ongoing. Is something like that a little disturbing? How do I say this one? ham fat.
Yeah, let's go back to the ham fat.
Yeah. I guess because it seems to be so extraordinary, the fact that the New York City District Attorney is going after a former president or a past president, it seems like there's a bunch of undercurrents, a lot of political undercurrents. Do district attorney's offices suffer from a lot of political pressures? Or are you able to isolate yourself and pretty much just follow the law as you see it?
Well, what we need to do is to follow the law as we see it. So that's, what happens. Does that mean that there aren't potential political pressures? Of course there are. There are all types of pressures. But the goal is to not succumb to those and to, of course, maintain the objectivity, the neutrality. It's a nonpartisan office. We serve all the people. So it can be challenging, and there can be, of course, special interests and allegations that can be directed towards district attorneys and the course of the actions and decision-making process that they undergo. But ultimately, it's our duty to rise above all of that and follow and enforce the law.
Is it as simple as that? Just the different interpretation of the law, that somebody sees the law one way versus perhaps the way that the office sees it? Or is it the outcome that's the focus, that where the pressures start to come?
Well, I think it depends on the particular situation and what the source of those particular pressures might be. So, I would say it's probably the totality of the process from beginning to end. And certainly there can be different interpretations of the law, and thankfully we have different branches of the government to assist in that process. And so, you know, the judiciary, the legislator, and then the executive branch. And so we are one part of the overall process. And if there's, you know, evidence to believe that an individual has violated the law and that there's sufficient evidence, you know, to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt, it's incumbent upon us to move forward, regardless of potential, you know, political pressures and other interests.
Plea bargaining would seem to be the area where there's most, historically at least, most focus on and contention and how come and those types of things. Is that still the case?
Well, plea bargaining is really a necessary part of the process. If we were to proceed to trial on every case that's filed, that would completely drain all resources within the system. And that really wouldn't be beneficial to others involved, in, you know, the victims as well as the perpetrators of the offenses. So plea bargaining does entail a balancing of the facts, the interests, and looking at all of the circumstances. And so historical prior offenses, the nature of the underlying offense, what's been alleged, indications of remorse, the wishes of the victim that might be involved in the particular offense. So there are a lot of factors that are involved. And as well as, you know, sometimes, you know, what are the priorities within a particular community in terms of where they want to see their law enforcement community directing most resources.
Are there other tools that are used that are comparable to plea bargaining that get people's attention?
I think that it just really depends, you know, and sometimes folks might generally have one position, but they might then have a personal interest or someone that becomes directly involved in a matter that's a criminal nature, and that might change their outlook entirely.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Stacey Eads. I'll see if I can do a better job on my end on this one. What is the biggest surprise that people outside of the office would be stunned at? About either the day-to-day or some of those external pressures that are normal for you folks?
Wow, that's hard to answer as well, but maybe it's just the nature of this morning. But I would think that maybe just how, you know, particularly over the years, we within our office are really dealing with, you know, I'm trying to improve from the ham fat, but we just deal with like the most traumatic, horrific, challenging, difficult things that happen within our community. And that just becomes sort of the norm within. And sometimes I'll stop and think about the conversation that I just had or the topics that I just had, and even sometimes with just support staff and as we're developing the language within a complaint, the charging document, and how I might have to without giving that much specific thought to the underlying circumstances, talk about things that are just really quite horrific and in very normal terms, and I just think that that's that would be, I think, somewhat shocking if I were from the outside coming in and just hearing that we just have to deal with really tragic, traumatic situations and have some degree of, you know, objectivity to it and move forward so that we can prosecute the cases and handle the cases and just, you know, and I just think that would be really unusual and somewhat shocking, perhaps, for folks who aren't dealing with that on the day to day, and you know, and I think that's probably similar for law enforcement and, you know, first responders and sort of the tragic situations that they have to deal with, and that's how we and just how we have to compartmentalize things, and so.
With those documents, is that? Do they become public documents? I would think, you know, coming from your point of view, that you would want to be as blatant, I guess, or as accurate as possible, and really show this is why we're going after this person, because they did all these nasty things.
Well, right. And I guess the example that came to my mind, somewhat unfortunately, was a complaint wherein I was having to allege specific prior sex crimes that had occurred and having to have specificity within the complaint regarding what those particular acts were. And just being able to have just a very direct conversation with a support staff person regarding those specific acts, and that's just part of our day to day. And I would just think from that, if one were to come from the outside into the office, that would be a little that would take you back a little bit.
If we were just standing there listening in,
yeah,
it'd be
just
shocking.
The volume of you know, photographs and videos and conversations and you know, people in distress, I guess there's just a lot of potential for vicarious or secondary trauma as well for folks that are working within the office. And I think that might be something that maybe people within the general community wouldn't necessarily think about.
Is there a, I'm trying to get the letters right because I know I'll screw it up, is it PTSD?
PTSD.
Is it, okay. Is that a real thing to deal with?
Well, that's...
For staff?
Well, I think that's certainly a potential for staff in terms of what... So if you're constantly being exposed to trauma that's been, you know, hearing stories and real life firsthand experiences, seeing photographs. Sometimes we hear videos and watch videos that have horrific acts depicted on them. So, that's going to have an impact on the viewer and just being exposed to those things on a somewhat regular basis. And so just trying to be really aware of the potential impacts that those things might have on staff within the office. That's very real. And of course as well, in terms of just looking at PTSD as a whole, is that part of our world? And well, it is part of our world, and it's also part of the work we do in trying to serve victims, you know, and trying to appreciate where a victim might be at the moment in time that we're having a conversation with them, or we're trying to prepare them to testify, or asking of them to share an account of the victimization that they might have endured, and in appreciating the impact that that prior trauma might have on their ability to provide an accurate account to us, and you know, a chronological account, and so all of that trauma certainly will impact their ability to do that. So
it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Stacy Eads. Why does somebody want to be go into your line of work?
Why would someone want to go into my line of work?
Yeah.
Oh, I think that there are a variety of reasons. I can speak to myself. I wanted something that would allow me to serve my community and to help others. And so it's certainly met those particular purposes. I think that our line of work is it's very interesting work. It's, you know, we're you know, dealing with issues that involve our community, society as a whole. What are our priorities? What are our desires, kind of basic human needs, and human behavior? I think it's very fascinating, ever-changing work that can be intellectually gratifying as well as gratifying in terms of assisting others and always changing.
Overwhelming?
Is that a concern? Be. Yeah. It certainly can be overwhelming. There's a greater need than we can necessarily address, and we have, you know, limited resources. So we do have to prioritize, and it can be difficult in terms of really giving every individual the time and the resources and assistance that they deserve. And that can be a huge challenge.
So what do you look for with a potential employee? Those same traits, those same desires?
I think that those traits and desires can certainly be good motivators and also help sort of ground an individual on the particularly, you know, tough days. So... Sure. I think it is key that folks wanting to work at the district attorney's office want to serve their community and help others. You know, additional qualities would certainly be the ability to learn, a strong work ethic, being organized, committed, dedicated.
Show up to work on time, be nice person. Yeah, all the those types of things. But how do you know if you got a superstar?
I think the district attorney's office is full of superstars. I really do, in every avenue. And you know, we have superstar investigators, we have superstar support staff, administrative our victim witness advocates, every one of them are superstars. And of course, we have a great team of prosecutors. So how do we know? I mean, everyone's an individual, and so people have their certain greater strengths and sometimes weaknesses. And sometimes our strengths can also be our weaknesses, and you know how that it goes. But just, you know, doing the work that we do within the office and kind of the reality of those limited resources and, you know, including time. There's only so much time. And that's one of our greatest resources, which certainly is a limited one. But you know, I get a lot of feedback, and I find that to be very helpful. So I like to hear, you know, the positive as well as you know, the more constructive criticism, as you will.
Criticism does come with constructive components.
That's you know, that's occasionally. The best. It's like, okay, I need to know when there are problems, and I also love to hear, you know, creative thinking in terms of potential solutions.
Just don't unload. Basically, yeah. Is there an it? You know, there's oftentimes discussion, oh, he has it, she has it. Is there an it?
Well, it depends, I guess, you know, just the context. I think that, you know, not every individual that might have the basic qualifications to be a practicing lawyer, for example, would necessarily have the desire and drive and mindset to be a prosecutor. You know, and even within kind of that larger group of, you know, who will be a successful prosecutor, some are, again, going to have their areas of strength. Some folks are really naturally good at working and with victims and listening and processing and having kind of that empathy that can be very helpful in terms of helping victims work through the process and the prosecution of cases. And not everybody has that, and some folks can, you know, develop that, but I do think sometimes these are just sort of, you know, innate characteristics that might be stronger in one than another.
What about the fear of public speaking? I mean, they talk about, next to drowning, fear of public speaking. That's one too, for most people. Now, it's not presenting concepts and topics in front of tens of thousands of people. But a lot of times, you know, 20 people is enough to get somebody really challenged.
Oh, sure.
Do these folks walk through that? Have they already gotten to that point where that's not a concern? It's kind of like showtime and they get excited about it. How does that factor in?
I think, again, some folks are a little bit more naturally able to sort of set those fears aside and just move forward and not be particularly concerned about how their presentation might be received by the audience, and I don't think personally that it matters in terms of the size of the audience. You could have a very small audience that could be far more intimidating than a larger audience. It just kind of depends who they're made up of, who your audience is, and of course it's always important to know who your audience is, but you know, I think I just have to speak, you know, personally, in terms of dealing with the public speaking, I think you have to put those fears aside and do your job and do it for the benefit of the community and take on that role. So it's like you might have those fears, but that cannot overcome your ability to serve.
The higher purpose.
Right.
So to speak. Do you guys role play?
You know, we will sometimes run by our closing arguments, opening arguments. We certainly discuss the factual scenarios underlying particular cases. So we do discuss those with one another, and sometimes it's literally, you know, rehearsing the closing arguments that we might be presenting to the jurors. I think that in an ideal world, we would probably do that much more frequently and much more critically. And that's, you know, one of the goals I have for the office is to, as we become more fully staffed and as time allows, is to really go through our opening statements, our closing arguments, and discuss the details of a particular case, you know, both the strengths and the weaknesses. I think sometimes we can, you know, certainly benefit from having each other's input in terms of the power of those arguments, as well as how we might look at the facts of a case could be different from how another individual might look at them.
Yeah, nothing's more sobering than listening to, for us, it'd be an air check. Why did I say that? Why did I do that?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I remember the first time I had to read a transcript of, I think it was a closing argument, and it was a matter that was up on appeal, and it was a sex offense case, and it was actually an indecent exposure case for an incident that occurred in Hoopaw, and it was a tough read, you know. I'll never forget that feeling, but it was necessary, and so it's definitely a good mechanism to grow and learn from.
You said that's a time factor or a staff factor that's kind of limiting the opportunity to do that at this point?
It's both, because we are down on the number of attorneys within our office. We've been, you know, much like district attorneys' offices across the state and probably nationally, we've had a lower number of applicants and positions filled within the office in terms of prosecutors. So they're the basic nuts and bolts of appearing on court calendars and taking care of our cases. So because we have to get that work done, it doesn't necessarily allow for adding on new. So limited staff, limited time.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:45.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:49. I wonder if anybody's going to have split pea soup tonight because of this show. Oh, I hope not. I really hope not. Oh, so we're back with Stacy Eads. You had to hear the first segment for that to make any sense whatsoever. If somebody wants to go into the career as a prosecutor, high school, they have that inclination. Do you guys allow people to shadow, job shadow, or do any kind of an outreach like that? Because I would think a lot of the information is pretty, either it's gruesome, as you were kind of referencing earlier, or protected, confidential, things of that nature. Is there a chance for somebody to kind of tap in if they or their kid or their grandkid is interested?
Yeah, absolutely. We have job shadows very frequently. So we just ask that folks just reach out to the office, and they could just send an email to the district attorney's email, which is districtattorney@co.ca.humboldt.us. And
dot, dot, dot.
I might have done that backwards, but yeah. Go to the website. You'll find the email. But yeah, we'd love to have folks come in and job shadow. And so we've had high school students and college students. We've had a number of interns as well. And, you know, in terms of course, we try to minimize, in particular with a job shadow, what they might be exposed to and things that are of highly confidential nature. We, you know, steer them away from that, of course. But with our interns, they enter into confidentiality agreements just like everyone else that works within the office, because yes, we are exposed to confidential information, and that information has to stay within the office for the sole purpose that it's there.
I would think that would take it from being a lark to something a little bit more serious in nature. sets the tone.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've had the benefit of some tremendously productive, motivated, wonderful interns within the last couple of years. And so excited to have them and encourage folks that are interested to just reach out to us.
Does that run through Humboldt or through CR?
We've had folks from different, many are through Humboldt. We've had folks that were with different colleges and institutions. Some young people are attending college online, and a lot of those programs might not necessitate them to be at the actual location of the institution. So that's been great. So there's a little room for flexibility.
Is that a requirement to get your law degree to do an internship?
So generally, no. I would think that, you know, perhaps some schools have different requirements, but it's not necessarily a requirement. I think it can be very helpful and beneficial, and I think for, you know, any profession or a career that an individual might be considering, it would be wise to have an experience, you know, working within that particular field.
Yeah, I think it would be like a teacher who hasn't been in the classroom before.
Right, right.
Well, shock and awe when that happens.
certainly. So, yeah, there are a lot of programs out there, and but we love to have interns.
You want to take a shot at that website one more time?
That was the email.
Fair enough. Thanks for coming by and suffering through this one. See everybody tomorrow.
Thanks.